I do feel like never before, you have heard this before, but about, like, you know, just bring your point of view into your work. Like, make sure that really bring your what is with you, what you've been carrying with you for the long time, bring it into your work, because it's going to make a difference. And more than ever, I feel like this is the time for that.
Welcome to the Style Frame Saturdays podcast, the podcast dedicated to ideation, visual storytelling, and concept development as it pertains to an animated production. We'll be breaking down the brief of our guests' favorite style frames, and we'll also get a glimpse into the inspiration and workflows behind their frame of choice as well. You just heard from Ramel Ruiz, a designer and illustrator creating artwork for motion. His journey into motion design is an incredible one, and it's a journey that can even be seen in his own work today. So let's check it out. Hey, Ramel, it's wonderful to have you on the show today. How's everything going?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I know we've been chatting about, you know, having you on the show for a while now. And I know that, you know, finally our schedules were able to sort of work out. So, you know, I'm so stoked that you're here today because, you know, I've been a fan of your work for quite the longest time. I know we've gotten the opportunity to meet in person at a little conference called the Dash Bash a couple of years ago as well. So yeah. Being able to put a face to the artwork.
I'm looking forward to.
Are you going this year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, nice. I unfortunately don't think I'll be able to make it, but I know. It's a disappointment. But it was so much fun meeting you there, you know, and just being able to put a face to the artwork that, you know, I've just really admired online for quite the longest time. So, you know, I'm just so thrilled that you were able to join us today. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's an honor to be here, and I'm looking forward for the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, if it's cool with you, you know, I'd love to jump into things. Mm-hmm. For anyone who doesn't know you, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about yourself, perhaps a little bit about your story and how you got into the field of motion design?
Yeah. So I was born and raised in the Dominican Republic, tiny island in the Caribbean. I initiated studies in graphic design, illustration there. But also, I was exposed to physical theater, and so I got into theater simultaneously, both design and performing. So I think that really took me to a different place, in a sense of, like, I got a scholarship to come here and study in LA, study theater in LA.
Oh, very cool.
And that's how we moved here, me and my family now. So that was a big journey, in a sense of, I didn't know at that time. I have heard of the term motion design before, motion graphics. I understood very basic what it was, but I think I understood at a time that was around when we moved to study here, my wife and I, it was 2008, and I came to a theater school and finished, and then we realized it was really hard to get into a production or like a, you know, a play, or it was really hard to just to get into. Even funny enough, that's a tiny bit of a trivia there. But we got in even into an audition for Cirque du Soleil, and so you know, we did pretty wild stuff during that time, and so different from what I'm doing right now. We were performing, we were learning, teaching workshops, movement and like movement classes and all of that. So it was a different life. I realized, okay, I need to go back to be very pragmatic and get into a job. You know, I need to start making money, because we married and we were starting thinking about a family and all that. So my gear shifted to into, let's go back into design, graphic design, illustration, and all of that. And I thought, you know, I really like illustration, but I do want to tell stories. Like, I want to, you know, like, I want to see this thing come alive at some point. And I was in LA, so Disney is there. All the studios, the animation studios are there. So you have access to all these classes. You have access to, you are exposed to all these artists around. And I started taking, like, gesture drawing classes. I started, you know, taking just classes at night, you know, with different guys who were working at different studios or different shows. And that definitely brought me back to the beginning of, like, telling a story. You know, now I'm not in the stage, but I am behind a computer trying to communicate an idea and trying to make an audience feel something. And so while all that was happening, my brother wanted to make a children's book. And I was like, that's a perfect stage to just, like, dump everything that I'm learning on this thing. And the book was called Goldie's Folly. And we just started playing with that. And that, you know, it was a self-published book, which then turned an idea into, oh, let's create an indie publisher. And from there, we started making our own content and books and all of that. And but everything in the back of my head, animation was always there. I wanted to, at some point, work for a studio and on a show or on a movie. And it actually happened. I mean, I actually got to work on Ben 10 for Cartoon Network, or, like, just designing a few backgrounds. And in the middle of that too, I actually met Jorge from Ordinary Folk, before Ordinary Folk actually, and we actually to work on a project together, which was incredible. I didn't know who Jorge was at the time, and then I am like, oh my goodness, this guy is incredible. And so that was a great opportunity and a great exposure to the world of motion design. And then I remember starting, okay, I need to find out what this is. Like, there is a whole thing behind the movies, behind advertising, behind that is making all these really interesting projects. And having some experience in animation, I realized, like, okay, I don't just want to do background design. I just don't want to do turnaround for characters. I don't, because that's how, you know, the pipeline works. Like, if you do storyboards, that's all you do. You're never going to see colors on their storyboards. It depends on what project it or what show it is, but for the most part, you will never do anything else but that role that you're hired for. And I realized I want to do something more than that. I definitely want to have my hands in color, in lighting, and I want to get my hands dirty. I felt like motion design was the place, like, was the space for that. I realized that it was a snap. Like, I realized, yeah, I'm sold. Like, I'm here. I'm not gonna. And from there, I started, like, just designing and working, trying to meet people. I went to Blend in 2019. That was the last one, before the pandemic. And then after, yeah, the rest is history. I met a bunch of incredible artists, incredible, like, studios, and yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible ride. And I love the people in this industry. I just love their ingenuity. I just love like how generous people are, how accessible people are, and I just love it. So
yeah, no, I mean, people in the motion design industry, they always talk about how, well, at least the people that I sort of, you know, follow on various social channels and stuff, always talk about, you know, like how welcoming and supportive and collaborative this industry is. And I have to agree. I mean, I've had pretty much a similar experience in motion design as yourself, where everyone's just been such a team player and willing to help and a great support network and just there to sort of bounce ideas off of one another and stuff.
Go ahead. Like, people are so smart. Like,
yes.
People are incredibly smart. And sometimes they are like, I just turned 40.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I mean, that was September, but what I'm saying is like,
40 and a half. We're approaching the half mark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes so fast. But, yeah, it's like honestly, what is helping me right now is like, I don't feel like I am, for the most part, in most circles, I am the oldest or one of the older people around. But I don't really care, just because it's like, I am constantly learning. And I just love that idea of like, you're a long life learner. You'll never stop. And things are going so fast. And you have to be, you need to be able to let go of your ways in a way, you know, like you have an instinct. And I would say instinct is one of the, developing an instinct more than just, a skill, it's huge, because instinct is going to take you, it can take you pretty far if you feed it. So it's been great. It's just, I love it.
That's awesome. Well, I know offline, you know, we were discussing, you know, which frame you might talk about today. And, you know, it led to this fun idea about, you know, the creative journey you've just described for us and how it might actually be represented in your work over the years. So if it's cool with you, you know, I'd love to chat about the frames that you've selected to share with us today. Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yes. So these first frame, it was during that period of time where illustration was more for, like, I was thinking more visual development, where I was thinking more about creating an environment, creating a feeling, bringing some, of course, if you like in that, for example, that piece, it is inspired in the style of Ivan Earle, which was the art director for Disney's, in the 1950s, Sleeping Beauty. It's one of my favorite films. And it has this very, really interesting, like, shape language that I love. And his uses of texture and his color, it makes you feel like you're in a stage. Like it's there, you know, and the lighting there and the shadows. I mean, there was something in there that was very theatrical. Again, coming back to theater and coming back to, it was very theatrical. And I felt like, I don't want to do like my shapes. Usually if you let me do my work, like if I don't have to follow anybody's brief or, any guidelines, like I have to do now, if you let me design stuff, I will go very graphic for the most part, but I always want to bring some texture, some like sense of like, you know, it's, you know, that there's no person that can look like this, or there's no tree that can look like that. It's very geometrical, very, you know, but at the same time, I want to make you feel that, who knows, maybe it could look, maybe a real tree could look like that, because there is a sense of reality to it, because of the lighting, maybe because of the texture, maybe, you know, how the color bounces back and forth from it. And I want to design, but at the same time, I want to paint. So I love that, you know, I love that, bringing that to the table whenever I can. I love also this, like, for example, if I'm in Illustrator, I love like designing Illustrator. But there is a point where I thought, okay, enough with that. Like, I want to bring some life. Like, I want to bring something organic to it, something that feels real to it. But sure. I do like the sharp edges, and I do like all that stuff. So in terms of aesthetic and stuff, in terms of the things that I'm looking for in a piece, I'm always looking for that type of like aesthetic and that feel.
Sure.
Which is, I would say, it's a 1950s, 1960s type of like aesthetic. There was I think that there was this mid-century modern look to things in the 60s, 50s that was very iconic in everything, in animation, in interior design, in furniture, in everything. So there is something about that time in history where, like, it really influences a lot of aesthetics of the things that I gravitate towards.
Sure. And so this piece that, you know, we're looking at right now, is this a personal piece that you were working on for yourself,
this,
or is
was,
this part like a commissioned or sort of a team?
Yeah, it was a commission for a textbook.
It was
on the topic on like on this particular chapter. It's talking about creation of the world, you know, in from a biblical perspective.
Okay, cool.
And the fall. So it's basically like a duality of like realities. Like, this is creation. This is the fall of things. Like, so there is a duality there. So that's what. You know, I felt like the theme, and also how epic the theme is and how like timeless it is. I felt like that style, that Ivan Earle sensibility would align pretty well. And I love these. I have other pieces like this. But I feel like I have posted this before, and so I think people will be. If people have seen my work, people have seen this piece. So,
sure. I mean, I definitely see like your sort of style in this piece. Like, you know, artwork that I sort of associate with you, I can totally see it in this piece. So, I was really happy to see this as one of the frames that you decided to talk about, because I was like, yes, you know, this screams Rommel, you know, and you can totally
I just started working on the furrow. This year in January, and it's been an incredible privilege, honor to be working alongside Seth and Matt and David and Janet, and they're incredible people and just incredible like team, you know. And sometimes we are in these meetings and I'm trying to catch up with like just the understanding of like, okay, going through the brief and like letting that inform a lot of your decisions, of course. And it's just a different muscle, you know? So sure. I feel like, so it's been an interesting journey for me, from jumping from style to style, which I enjoy a lot, just because it's freaky. Like you jump into doing stuff like this, and then you jump into doing stuff like that the next frames that we're going to see, that it doesn't have to do anything in terms of stylistically speaking, but it's being incredible to be in that spot where you are exposed to so much ways of thinking, so many talented people, where sometimes I am the one following the art direction of someone else. And I have loved that experience, because then I'm learning. It's almost like I'm learning the recipe of someone else. I'm learning the ways of someone. So it you know, I cannot illustrate the same way anymore. Like I have to now. I have learned so many other things, that even the things that I would like, that instinctually I will do, now it's different, just because I've accumulated all these points of view. And yeah, it's really, it's fascinating.
No, it's cool to hear you say that though too, that like now your way of illustrating is maybe transformed a little bit. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
definitely
for the better, for the better.
Oh, absolutely. No, for sure. But yeah, no, definitely tell us a little bit about, you know, so now how your illustration has, approach to illustration maybe has changed a little bit, you know, how that sort of comes up in this other frame that you're sharing with us as well.
So this next project, which was recently, it was dropped, that word, dropped. It was dropped last year. And it was called Welcome to Synth, and it was basically the exploration of sound through synthesizers, like how sounds work through these machines that, you know, can modulate and create sound. And the first for me, at the beginning, for me was understanding actually how a synthesizer worked. So I had to kind of like, we had to all learn how this thing works, and understanding the science of it. And like, that was incredible. And it was incredible to try to put that into a visual understanding of that. And then we have Renaud Levency working on the art direction, and I had initial thoughts, which is what we are going to see. We had a few initial explorations where we just like playing around with the idea, like how this idea can look like, or yeah, how these concepts can be communicated visually. In these images that we are seeing, you will see a few sketches that I did in Photoshop, but you also will see a few other explorations in Illustrator, just to kind of like be able to start feeling this thing, like how are we translating this information? How can we, convey these ideas in a way that is exciting, that is fresh, that is new, and that fits the medium, you know. And it was an incredible, for me, it was almost like a school for me. Like, you just understand, like, it was a art direction school. It was a motion design school for me. Just that project alone, seeing the discussions, the creative discussions behind it, like the things to take into consideration. Like, I mean, it was incredible for me.
That's so cool.
Be part of that.
Yeah, no, I'll bet. Well, and I love one word that you just said that really stuck out to me too, is that, you know, like you had said, how are we going to translate this? And I think translate is such a great word for some of the work that we do. Because one question I had for you as well with regards to both of these frames was, you know, one obviously is one unique style and the other is a completely different style. In terms of visual storytelling, you know, like, what does your process look like when you approach visual storytelling, and is there any similarity between you know, the more biblical frame versus this, you know, synthesizer, frame with the furrow? Or is there a difference, you know, similarities or differences? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say it's telling a story. There is a beginning, a medium, and an end. But it is a completely different, it's a different language. And I think, for example, this specific piece, I mean, it's visceral. It's like, we are using like circles and like lights and gradients, a bunch of gradients, color gradients, and that's all it is. It's basically just shapes dancing around. It's a festival of shapes, basically. Mm-hmm. But there is something that is more visceral, more abstract about it. And I think it's you know, there are many, like, if you make me define what motion design is, I would say, and you make me pick a piece, like a number of pieces, I would definitely add that piece into that group, just because it does communicate, and it does convey an idea without having a sort of character in there. Or,
sure,
you know, there's it has sound, of course, and there is a narration there, but the images does something that the narration doesn't do, and that's, I think, that duality and that collaboration between sound and what's happening visually, I think I feel that piece is a good choice for that. And for me, so if you ask me about the difference, it's just like in the first piece, I am thinking about very specific elements to tell a story. Whereas in here, we are talking about shapes and sound in a way that embody an idea concept. So it's just a different realm altogether. Like I think it's awesome to be able to do both, to be able to jump into a very abstract pieces and then jump into, oh, let's create a whole environment with characters. And but I do think that there is a different muscle there, and it's being for me it's being career changing in a sense, like as an artist, like as a designer, I become better by just simplify things to the minimum. Of course, it's always about cleaning the space and making this one thing be enough, right?
Yeah.
So I think in that matter, motion design is being incredible, and being able to think how to make one element tell the whole story, or how to use the least amount of elements to convey an idea. And I think that has been a huge component to this new stage that I am, where okay, let's you know, we are working for this project, for this client, and we this is the concept. It's just a line and a square, and let's do something with that, you know, and let's do a gradient let's do a gradient, or, you know, it's so minimal, and yet you have to make it work. You have to find a way to communicate an idea. And, you know, sometimes it's better than others, you know, more efficient, better. But yeah, it's a huge universe, honestly.
Well, and you just reminded me too, and I can't believe that I like completely forgot about this, that, you know, I'm looking at both frames and I'm like, okay, one is like really sort of like a visual, like representation and interpretation of like a story. Yeah. And then this other one is this completely abstract thing. It's like really more of like a sensory experience of like, you know, how we're visualizing sound. So like what you were saying before, they're just completely different sort of concepts in general. But going off of that, you know, I loved what you were just saying about how, you know, I guess maybe your approach to concept development, it sounds like at least, is that you start out with like, you know, like what's the most main important thing that we have to kind of get across, or what's the main sort of visual that we have to really sort of like hone in on? You know, what does your sort of concept development process look like once you kind of hone in on what that thing is?
Do you mean like after the idea is already conceived, and how do you go about to create a frame?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like what kind of like kicks off your sort of like visual development part of it?
Yeah. So for me, again, I rely a lot in instinct, and I know that sometimes that answer, it can be kind of frustrating, but I do think that being able to feel things in the frame, like not just like put a circle there and I don't know, like I've seen designers have this sensibility about just using a few shapes, but the way they compose those shapes, how those shapes relate to one another, like it's those choices, that instinct about doing those things, you know, like is what makes a difference, you know, it really is. So in this for example, in this project for Sin, it was Ren was incredible at the art directing it, and it was pretty clear. We already had color, of course, a color palette, and we had a number of shapes that were specifically chosen for to do, like the treatment to shapes were so very clear. So after that, it was a matter of like, okay, so what is the sequence here? How are things going to move? So I if you see the film, is basically we go into a tunnel, and there is and then that tunnel moves to the side, so you can see like how, you know, the sound and frequency works and all of that stuff. So having that like sequential idea in your head really helps to, okay, how this frame is gonna go. So there is a tunnel. So there's an idea of like a black hole like sucking like, you know, this sound or this idea. So that really helps, just the brief and but also like the storyboarding, it was huge for that. So understanding, and sometimes we were just exploring, like, we need a few explorations on these elements. We don't know yet how they are going to, when people tell me they don't know yet and they tell me to explore, that's like Candyland for me. That's like, because honestly, I feel like projects can be more exciting if you don't know everything.
That's like a great point.
Like I feel like knowing everything, and I'm not against of like, oh, you have everything storyboarded, but I do feel like the unexpected, surprising spark of someone bringing in a new viewpoint, or like just a new idea, could take the project to a whole new realm. So sometimes those frames were like, you know, let's just do a bunch of these and some of them, they're not going to make it, not even close. Like the one that I'm sharing, actually, didn't make it. But I really love what's happening in there, you know. So there were a bunch of frames that didn't make it into the final short. Some of those are incredible. Like, they just didn't work in the sequence. But as a framing on their own, they are telling a story on their own. You know, like, they're pretty rich. And going back, I would say, knowing the storyboarding process, I would say, is huge for, at least for me. So knowing what's going on, or what's the idea, what's the thread, how we are connecting the dots, how we are telling this story or this sequence, it really impacts a lot the decisions on designing a frame for me.
For sure. So are you involved in the storyboarding process as well, or are you just purely on like the design side of the projects at the Furrow?
It depends on the project. I have been in part of like the storyboarding process, but I also uh-huh. been on the end where I'm just designing what was already storyboarded.
Oh, that's so really cool.
So it depends. It depends on.
That's awesome.
The opportunity, but that's what I loved. It's like you get to become a leader, but you also become a follower as well. And I think that play is interesting, just because you as a leader are going to take me into a totally different direction. But then if I become a leader, I'm going to take you into a completely different direction as well, and that will take you to unexpected places. So I think that I love that collaboration dynamic. And Seth is being an amazing experience for me to just work alongside with him and just learn from him. It's just so much. Like you get to think in a completely different way, and I love being thrown into a almost opposite way of what I would think. It challenges a different muscle, and I love that.
No, and that's what's so great about motion design, is that, you know, you're not using the same muscle over and over because of what you just said too, because sometimes your role just kind of like automatically goes from one direction to another, and you just kind of roll with it. You take that responsibility and roll with it. And like you said, all the magical stuff that happens in between, that's what's so beautiful about this industry, is that, you know, anything's possible because of that. But you mentioned something about research and development that I would love to talk about a little bit too, because, you know, you had said, you know, at the beginning of the show that your sort of illustrative process has maybe changed a little bit since you've become, you know, a team member at the Furrow and working on projects like this one. But I'm just curious to know, like, has other processes like your research and development approaches and processes changed as well? Like, when you go back and think about this other piece, this more biblical piece, and now this, the synth project, you know, was the research and development similar, different? How did it look?
I would say I was way less intentional before, just because I felt like I just went with the flow of what I wanted to do. And of course, I had inspirations, of course, of like other artists, or like, you know, photo research, like how a specific tree looks like, or, you know, I will read a lot about what the specific content is, the story, the you know, I mean, of course, I mean, there was a research, but now I feel like I would say those, it's a different type of research. I would say now it's targeting a specific need, very specific tailored result that we want to get out of this experience. And I would say it feels more restricting, but it is because of what we are trying to communicate and what the client wants. And so I would say it's more academic, if there is a word for that, or it is more structured in comparison to what I used to do. I was very loose before in terms of my own work. And I like that. I like to have that space where I can try to feel more and try to be less logical about things. But I think motion design, it makes me think more. It's just different. I wouldn't say it makes me think more. It just makes me think different. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I love that. That's such a great response too. Well, you know, we're talking a lot about sort of like the more abstract and subjective stuff, you know, about these projects, right? We're talking about the brief and sort of the whole ideation portion of it. But you talked about at the top of the show too, that there's so much technically that goes into these frames too, that's what I love about your work as well. Like, you know, there's, when you look at both of these pieces, you know, obviously, there's such a, in terms of aesthetics, there is such a unique approach to both of them, very distinctly unique for both of them. But you're able to inject this sort of sense of realism in your work too, with like you were talking about before, with like how you sort of tell a story with lighting and texture and framing and exaggeration and stuff like that. So, you know, I know a lot of people love talking about the technical stuff on the show too and hearing about it. So I'd love to learn, like, you know, from you, you know, what your sort of technical approach is to your illustrations. Like, you know, where do you start? Like, what is the first thing that sort of like grabs your eye and you're like, okay, I'm going for it. Like, where do you begin technically?
For me, I try to keep it that very simple. I carry with me always a sketchbook.
Oh, cool.
I still like my feel paper and pencil, get my hands dirty. For me, feeling is very important, like feeling things. So drawing things all the time for me helps me to get into it. And there's something about, like, you know, I have a Cintiq right here next to me, and like, it's cool, you know, but I do feel like when I put more tension in the pencil on paper, there is a different trigger for me than when I do it on. So it's just a different feel. And I feel like whenever I'm thinking about an idea. Yes, I have images in here in the screens, but I try to always go back to draw, you know, because I want to not think too much about copy paste, like just doing the keys on the keyboard, not having these things in my head to distract me from the main thing, which is what is the idea. Whereas when you grab a pencil, it's like, you're not thinking how you're going to move the pencil, command C, command Z, you know, command V, you know, like, you're not thinking about that stuff. You're not touching, it's more tangible. I like to feel things like that. So whenever I approach any project, it depends. Like, for example, when it's something that is very geometrical, it seems like it's gonna go really well in Illustrator, just go in Illustrator. And to me, it's very natural, especially after going to the graphic design school. I just grab my mouse and start playing with shapes. And like, for example, for the same, some of those expressions were all Illustrator.
Oh, wow.
So, and that feels very comfortable because you can just lay back. So it depends on the medium too. So for example, if I illustrate in Illustrator, you know that when you press shift and you're using the pen tool, you are going to do a 45 angle automatically. So you are going to do, and sometimes I illustrate just like that. I'm going to make a character or a hand or something, and that gets me like almost a gridded sense of an illustration, because you are following almost the per default angles that when you press shift, the software gives you. So I sometimes just use that, and that gives me a completely different feel than if I just do it on my own, if I drew it. So sometimes I just use the exactly what the software does, and to shape a character, for example, or to shape anything. And sometimes, or I just, like, sometimes, let's say I want to put a head together, and you use a square and use a circle and you have a head. You know, like, sometimes it's just that.
Right.
And that can be, if you want to leave a very geometrical, very like Bauhaus looking thing.
Sure.
Where everything comes out of a primary shape.
Mm-hmm.
Like a primal shape, you know, like square, triangle, rectangle. That's it. So I have working projects where everything is built out of that, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you are not doing any modifications. You're just using those shapes to do any shape.
So cool.
So I think, so that is, the medium informs a lot the art direction too, for me sometimes. Of course, when you're in Photoshop too, it depends if you're doing something that's very freehand and... But still, I kind of like, if you leave it to me, I will do very gridded type of work where you see shapes and you see almost like a grid in there, but you don't see it. It's there, but you kind of sense it. You sense a sense of order, a sense of like there are things that like are composed in a way that everything is like either straight or very oblique, very, very crystal clear 45 degree angle, and that gives you a sense of like, oh, there is a grid there, but it's not there. I see mountains, I see stuff, you know, it's just a grid. I'm just using all the very specific angles of.
And you bringing this up, you know, this, by the way, this is amazing. Like kind of like this whole breakdown of like how you approach stuff technically. I mean, like it's such a cool insight because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I can like really see what you're talking about in the more biblical frame, you know, with some of the, like the rocks and some of the sort of like structures that are jutting out and everything. I'm like, oh gosh, yeah, I see exactly what you're talking about. And that sense of grid that's clearly not there, but like, inferred, I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I can totally see that in this piece too. But I could see a little bit of that in the synth piece as well, because like you were saying, you're working off of these sort of geometric shapes and, you know, they're sort of creating these like interactive experiences between one another too. So it's really cool to hear that for you, you know, your technical approach is that going to pen and paper, which I love, you know, like me this day too, if I have to jot down an idea, forget it. It's not going up on Photoshop. I have to like pull out a piece of paper and like write it out with a pencil and eraser. But for you to hear that you're doing that plus working like on a Cintiq and jumping into Photoshop right away. I mean, like you couldn't have said it better. Like, you know, whatever the medium demands or whatever the project demands of the medium, I mean, like that's how you're going to approach it. And I think that that's just so cool.
Yeah. I mean, and also like just seeing how, see animators, how they take something into After Effects and they do something that supposedly you're not supposed to do After Effects, but they do it there. Like I've seen guys illustrating After Effects. I'm like,
that's true.
That's amazing. I want to do that. I definitely want to do that. I mean, in terms of like just transitioning into animation, it's right there. Everything is there. Yeah. So you know, there are approaches that come out of like nowhere like that. Like, it's like there are people who feel comfortable about doing the most interesting things that you will never think of doing in like in a certain particular software. So it's just I know guys who paint with a mouse. They know they will never do a Cintiq. So, you know, I know Craig Mullings, which is one of the first like the man is incredible. It's he was one of the first digital artists, like in the 90s when Photoshop was coming out, and he started painting with his mouse. And it was not until later that he was like, okay, let me do this Cintiq thing. But yeah, it's really interesting. And that's why I feel like, you know, the conversation of AI and all of that, I feel like, you know, that's a different conversation, different podcast. But I do feel like never before, you have heard this before, but about like, you know, just bring your point of view into your work, like make sure that, you know, really bring your what is with you, what you've been carrying with you for a long time, bring it into your work, because it's going to make a difference. And sure, more than ever, I feel like this is the time for that. Even the way you approach a particular software or the way you do things, you know. And that's why you have to spend time with the medium. You cannot just like just jump into something and think that things are going to just happen. I think just spending time and really do things that are counterintuitive at times to see what come out of that. I think play is play and instincts. Again, coming back to instincts, I think play. Something I've been learning with Seth a lot is just like, you know, not to get attached to things at all. Just like, just jump to the next idea. Don't get too attached to it, whatever you're doing. And I think the more you do that jump, the more you discover a rhythm in you, and also you trigger in you other sensibilities that you didn't know you had. And I think, again, yeah, trying things differently, it helps a lot, just to kind of like keep moving, you know, keep moving all the time.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's something that Ryan Summers brought up on his episode as well. And it's something that I have to constantly remind myself about too. And I think I've mentioned this on other episodes too, but like, yeah, I've always, you know, have an idea in my head and I like want to go after it, but I do have to like sort of like allow sort of these other opportunities to come in and guide that sort of vision as well. Because like you said, like this period of play that you are able to experience on projects with Seth and the guys over there at the Fur. I mean, you know, you have one idea for the project and it probably ends up being something completely different sometimes. Yeah. And you're sort of like, where did that come from? And it looks amazing.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, especially if you're going from being an artist, you know, being an artist where your work is your identity in a way, where you want to sign that piece of work at the end, like in the corner. I think that's cool. I mean, I come from that, and I like to go back and forth. I like to, you know, I have some ideas that I want to develop. I want to do some exhibits. I would like to do pieces of work that are very personal. But I do think that, in my experience, that I try not to do that in motion design, just because it's animation. It's a highly collaborative space. You cannot get attached. You cannot get attached. You have to let go. You have to keep moving. And I think that I've been getting to a place of like just being cool with that, like where like, you know, if that frame didn't work. It's just like, it's just whatever works for the story, whatever works for the, and it's like that. I mean, even if you go to work for TV or for feature, oh my goodness, you're going to do so much stuff that you will never see out there. So, yeah, like that, I think you have to get used to the commercial aspect of what we do.
Absolutely.
Because if not, it's going to be very hurtful.
Yeah. Well, we've talked so much about sort of like the concept and ideation and technical aspects of these two beautiful projects and frames. I'm just curious, you know, like what would you say are the biggest challenges that you faced working on both of these?
So different. So like both challenges are so different from each other. In the first one, in those type of pieces where you have a place, you have characters, you have a feel, you are almost trying to art direct yourself, saying stop. When is the end of it? When should you? I mean, you get to the point where you're like, I think I'm done. But you can keep going, you know, you can keep going forever. And I think just saying to yourself, like, I think this is what I want. This is what I want to communicate here. I would say, yeah, just on that particular piece, it was all about like, how to create a stage where the audience can feel these ideas, you know. Time constraint was an issue, like in terms of like, you know, it will take quite a while to just get to this feel. Like, how do you get to that point? And sometimes for me, it was painful just because I don't know everything. I did the sketch for it, but I didn't know everything about it, which is good and it is bad. It is good because you come up with stuff that you will never come up if you knew everything. And two, because I mean, you still have a client, you still have to deliver. So right. I think that tension there is always what gets me, especially if I'm doing something that people are paying me to do what I do. Like, I'm paying you to do exactly what you do. I'm not bringing you a brief. I want you to do you. Those type of projects mm-hmm. are difficult. Whereas something like, for example, the project, the synth was more about like, you know, does this actually inform the sequence and the art direction and, you know.
Sure.
And is this aligned, you know? But it's aligned. There's already a color palette. There is already a direction for it. So just play with those elements. That's it. So it's a totally different realm.
For sure.
So yeah, I would say that. Yeah, the end of the project is, for me, like what this make the distinction. Just having that clear deadline.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's, you got to get it done by then. I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Well, what would you say is the biggest reward of working on, you know, from working on these two projects and specifically these two frames?
Two different responses too. I would say on this first one, it is for me to detach from it and just like looking at it and say, yeah, I feel this, and I feel like it has this rough like textures, and I love how, you know, I feel connected to it myself, you know, like I don't know if you have been in that place where, and this is for every artist, I think it's like this, where you get to a point where you are like satisfied or not. But yeah, like I have to almost get to it. Like I, you know, there's a song by U2 that says something. I forgot the title, but it's I'm still looking for something that I haven't found.
Oh yes, still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Yes. I don't know. I'm a big fan. I don't know how I forgot that, but it's because I'm in the podcast. I'm kind of nervous, but I feel that that's like the narrative of every creative, especially if you have the deadline. If you put that, you know, if you think about it, if you put that song and you put it in that situation, it's pretty funny.
It is.
And yeah, so I feel like it's until I find that thing. And sometimes, you know, I used to go to do all-nighters at times because of that. Sometimes it was a piece I was not finding that thing. And it was until like I need to find this thing. And it was like very rough, almost like I'm fighting with this piece of thing. Like I'm just fighting with it, you know? So sometimes it's just like that. Like I have to struggle through it.
Sure.
And get that look that I'm looking for. And then I don't have to play that song anymore.
Well, I feel like now I'm going to like have to start playing that song when I'm like at the tail end of a project too, and just be like, I found it. Have I found it yet? It's going to be stuck in my head from now here on out. I can guarantee it. Well, I always have to ask this at the end too, but yeah. You know, what about these frames make them your favorite frames?
The first one, I think, embodies aesthetics that I love. For me, when you asked that question, like when we were talking previously, you know, what is your favorite? I don't think I have a favorite piece ever. I don't think I have a favorite thing. I think like I have stages, and those stages, I would say there are aspects of those stages that I love a lot, just because the moment I kind of like, I feel like the moment I put myself in that cage of like, oh, you know, I feel like, I don't know. I don't have tattoos because I don't want to commit. Does that make sense?
Oh, wow.
So I have, I mean, I'm an artist. I mean, I do have a choice. Like I do have like things I would like to see, like, you know, there are things that I like, but I don't have a tattoo because I don't know if I want to carry that image for the rest of my life. And I know that people laugh at me, friends of mine laugh at me about that. But like, I don't know if I want to carry it, not because I think anything about the tattoo, but because it's hard for me to commit. So I think the same thing with this. It's like, I love this first piece because it carries those qualities that I am looking for in any piece, you know? I'm looking for these forces of like directional, like these dynamics all the time, these obliques and cutting through a horizontal line, because there's something rebellious about that idea. Like there's just a line and then there's something that cuts through it. And like there's a violence about that I love, you know, and there's some movement about that I love in anything that I'm doing. So I would say that those things are, you can see that in this piece. I think you can see that in the other piece too. It's hard for me to stay quiet, like just, oh, you know, just put one thing there. That thing needs to be, in a sense, gives you a sense of motion, to give you an idea that, it's a steal. At least for now, but it's moving somehow. You know, I'm trying to push you into believing that there is some sense of life in there. So that's that piece. But again, the other pieces have the same qualities, just translated like we were talking initially. translated very differently. But I'm always looking for that movement. I'm always looking for that break. I'm always looking for, you know, just invite, like, I don't know. I want you to feel like there's something happening in there, and get lost a little bit in there if possible. You know, maybe that's too much to ask, but that's at least that's intention.
No, I love that. What a great way to wrap it up too, and bring it back full circle to everything. I mean, you know, that's why I was so happy that, you know, we could get the chance to chat today, because you can see the sense of movement in your artwork, even if the artwork is just static. And I do think that you can sort of see your creative journey thus far in the work that you're doing, you know, even going as far back as like physical theater, like this sense of movement, you know, it's something really personal to you, it sounds like, and it comes out in your artwork. So, you know, I just, you know, you couldn't have said it any better, Ramel, to wrap it up.
No, thank you. Thank you for, yeah, this is really fun. Thank you so
much. Yeah. Well, this has been incredible. You know, thank you so much for sharing these frames and these projects with us and walking us through your creative approach and processes. If people want to connect with you to learn more about what you're working on, you know, what's the best way for them to do so?
Instagram / Ramel Ruiz, just like that. And RamelRuiz.com.
Perfect. No, that's awesome. Well, we'll be sharing your information and links
and
to
of some course, of the... see what we are doing at the Foro too.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, please drop the Foro's information too. No, we'll share the Foro stuff. We'll share your information, some of the resources you mentioned here for our audience to check out. But that wraps it up for today, everyone. Feel free to email us at styleframesatpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, if you like what you see and hear here, don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and review the show on your favorite podcasting platforms as well. And lastly, come connect with us on social. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you again, Ramel, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all in the next one.